And I did, without the least wanting to. But I hadn't the courage to destroy the letter, or the willpower to keep it in my pocket when Holly very tentatively inquired if by any chance I'd had news of Jose. It was two mornings later. I was sitting by her bedside in a room that reeked of iodine and bedpans, a hospital room. She had been there since the night of her arrest.
"Well, darling,"
she greeted me as I tiptoed toward her, carrying a carton of Picayune cigarettes and a wheel of new autumn violets.
"I lost the air."
She looked not quite 12 years. Her pale vanilla hair brushed back, her eyes, for once, minus their dark glasses, clear as rainwater. One couldn't believe how ill she'd been. Yet it was true.
"Christ, I nearly cooled. No fooling. The fat woman almost had me. She was yakking up a storm. I guess I couldn't have told you about the fat woman, since I didn't know about her myself until my brother died. Right away I was wondering where he'd gone, what it meant, Fred's dying. And then I saw her. She was there in the room with me, and she had Fred cradled in her arms, a fat, mean red bitch, rocking in a rocking chair with Fred on her lap and laughing like a brass band. The mockery of it! But it's all that's ahead for us, my friend. This comedienne waiting to give you the old raz. Now do you see why I went crazy and broke everything?"
Except for the lawyer O.J. Berman had hired, I was the only visitor she had been allowed. Her room was shared by other patients, a trio of triplet-like ladies who, examining me with an interest not unkind but total, speculated in whispered Italian. Holly explained that,
"They think you're my downfall, darling, the fellow what done me wrong."
And, to a suggestion that she set them straight, replied,
"I can't. They don't speak English. Anyway, I wouldn't dream of spoiling their fun."
It was then that she asked about Jose. The instant she saw the letter, she squinted her eyes and bent her lips in a tough, tiny smile that advanced her age immeasurably.
"Darling," she instructed me, "would you reach in the drawer there and give me my purse? A girl doesn't read this sort of thing without her lipstick."
Guided by a compact mirror, she powdered, painted every vestige of 12-year-old out of her face. She shaped her lips with one tube, colored her cheeks from another. She penciled the rims of her eyes, blued the lids, sprinkled her neck with 4711, attached pearls to her ears and donned her dark glasses. Thus armored, and after a displeased appraisal of her manicure's shabby condition, she ripped open the letter and let her eyes race through it while her stony, small smile grew smaller and harder. Eventually she asked for a picayune, took a puff.
"Tastes bum, but divine,"
she said, and, tossing me the letter,
"maybe this will come in handy if you ever write a rat romance. Don't be hoggy, read it aloud. I'd like to hear it myself."
It began, "My dearest little girl." Holly at once interrupted. She wanted to know what I thought of the handwriting. I thought nothing. A tight, highly legible, uneccentric script.
"It's him to a T, but toned up and constipated," she declared. "Go on."
"My dearest little girl, I have loved you knowing you were not as others. But conceive of my despair upon discovering in such a brutal and public style how very different you are from the manner of woman a man of my faith and career could hope to make his wife. Verily, I grieve for the disgrace of your present circumstance, and do not find it in my heart to add my condemn to the condemn that surrounds you. So I hope you will find it in your heart not to condemn me. I have my family to protect, and my name, and I am a coward where those institutions enter. Forget me, beautiful child. I am no longer here. I am gone home. But may God always be with you and your child. May God be not the same as Jose."
"Well?"
In a way, it seems quite honest and even touching.
"Touching? That square-ball jazz?"
"But after all, he says he's a coward. And from his point of view, you must see." Holly, however, did not want to admit that she saw. Yet her face, despite its cosmetic disguise, confessed it.
All right, he's not a rat without reason. A supersized King Kong-type rat like Rusty, Benny Shacklett. But oh, see, golly goddamn, she said, jamming a fist into her mouth like a bawling baby. I did love him, the rat.
The Italian trio imagined a lover's crease and, placing the blame for Holly's groanings where they felt it belonged, tut-tutted their tongues at me. I was flattered, proud that anyone should think Holly cared for me. She quieted when I offered her another cigarette. She swallowed and said,
Bless you, Buster, and bless you for being such a bad jockey. If I hadn't had to play Calamity Jane, I'd still be looking forward to the grub at an unwed mama's home. Strenuous exercise, that's what did the trick. But I've scared La Mère out of the whole badge department by saying it was because Miss Dykeroo slapped me. Yes, sir, I can sue them on several counts, including false arrest.
Until then, we'd skirted mention of her more sinister tribulations, and this jesting reference to them seemed appalling, pathetic. So definitely did it reveal how incapable she was of recognizing the bleak realities before her. Now, Holly, I said, thinking, be strong, mature, an uncle. Now, Holly, we can't treat it as a joke. We have to make plans.
You're too young to be stuffy, too small. By the way, what business is it of yours?
None, except you're my friend, and I'm worried. I mean to know what you intend doing. She rubbed her nose and concentrated on the ceiling.
Today's Wednesday, isn't it? So I suppose I'll sleep until Saturday, really get a good schloofin'. Saturday morning I'll skip out to the bank, then I'll stop by the apartment and pick up a nightgown or two and my main bocker, following which I'll report to Idlewild, where, as you damn well know, I have a perfectly fine reservation on a perfectly fine plane. And since you're such a friend, I'll let you wave me off. Please stop shaking your head.
Holly, you can't do that.
Hey, pourquoi pas? I'm not hot-footing after Jose, if that's what you suppose. According to my census, he's strictly a citizen of Limboville. It's only, why should I waste a perfectly fine ticket? Already paid for. Besides, I've never been to Brazil.
Just what kind of pills have they been feeding you here? Can't you realize you're under a criminal indictment? If they catch you jumping bail, they'll throw away the key. Even if you get away with it, you'll never be able to come home.
Well, so tough titty. Anyway, home is where you feel at home. I'm still looking.
No, Holly, it's stupid. You're innocent. You've got to stick it out.
She said, Rah, team, rah,
and blew smoke in my face. She was impressed, however. Her eyes were dilated by unhappy visions, as were mine. Iron rooms, steel corridors of gradually closing doors.
Oh, screw it, she said and stabbed out her cigarette. I have a fair chance they won't catch me, provided you keep your bouche fermé. Look, don't despise me, darling.
She put her hand over mine and pressed it with sudden, immense sincerity.
I haven't much choice. I talked it over with the lawyer. Oh, I didn't tell him anything, Ray Rio. He'd tip the badgers himself rather than lose his fee, to say nothing of the nickels O.J. put up for bail. Bless O.J.'s heart, but once on the coast I helped him win more than 10,000 in a single poker hand. We're square. No, here's the real shake. All the badgers want from me is a couple of free grabs and my services as a state's witness against Sally. Nobody has any intention of prosecuting me. They haven't got a ghost of a case. Well, I may be rotten to the core, Maud, but testify against a friend I will not. Not if they can prove he doped Sister Kenny. My yardstick is how somebody treats me. And old Sally, all right, he wasn't absolutely white with me. Say he took a slight advantage. Just the same, Sally's an okay shooter. And I'd let the fat woman snatch me sooner than help the law boys pin him down.
Tilting her compact mirror above her face, smoothing her lipstick with a crooked pinky, she said,
And to be honest, that isn't all. Certain shades of limelight wreck a girl's complexion. Even if a jury gave me the purple heart, this neighborhood holds no future. They'd still have up every rope from La Rue to Perona's Bar and Grill. Take my word, I'd be about as welcome as Mr. Frank E. Campbell. And if you lived off my particular talents, Cookie, you'd understand the kind of bankruptcy I'm describing. Uh-uh. I don't just fancy a fade-out that finds me belly-bumping around Roseland with a pack of West Side hillbillies. While the excellent Madame Trawler sashays her twat in and out of Tiffany's, I couldn't take it. Give me the fat woman any day.
A nurse, soft-shoeing into the room, advised that visiting hours were over. Holly started to complain and was curtailed by having a thermometer popped in her mouth. But as I took leave, she unstoppered herself to say,
"Do me a favor, darling. Call up the Times, or whatever you call, and get a list of the 50 richest men in Brazil. I'm not kidding. The 50 richest, regardless of race or color. Another favor, poke around my apartment till you find that medal you gave me, the St. Christopher. I'll need it for the trip."